Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudoux.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So in this episode, we're going to be talking about software. So all business people use software in this day and age for all types of tasks. And translators, as we know, use very specific software that is often very complex and it can be hard to understand, particularly for those outside of our industry, but often even for those inside the industry. In this episode, we are going to talk about computer-aided translation tools. So we'll address questions like, what are they? Do you really need them? And more. So Corinne, to start out with, why don't you give us a rundown of what translation tools that you have used or that you currently use?
Yeah, so I would say I've been freelancing for 16 years, and for probably the first 2 years, I think, that I was freelancing, I didn't use any CAT tools or any translation memory tools. So then probably like 13 years ago, I would say, I started out with two different tools, WordFast Classic and Omega T. So for anyone who is not familiar with those, Omega T is a standalone tool which is free. So it's open source software and it's community developed and it's completely free to use. And I think one thing we should say for people who are not super familiar with the whole CAT tool universe is that there are two different flavors of programs. Those that work within another piece of software, like most typically Microsoft Word, or those that are a standalone program. And I think now, you know, you'd put cloud-based programs in that category as well. So Omega T is a standalone, and I also at that time purchased WordFast Classic, which works within Microsoft Word. And I still to this day feel that Omega T has the best matching algorithm of any translation memory tool I have used, and that WordFast Classic is the easiest to learn how to use. So I still have a special place in my heart for both of those. But then about 6 or 7 years ago, I switched to Trotto Studio at your urging, Eve.
Well, actually, we'll get into that later, but it was at a client's urging. And so we both thought, yes. Okay, because we had a big project that came up and we kind of were ready to make the move and that client.
Right. So one, you know, takeaway, I think, for all of our listeners is, as Eve said, both of us bought Trotto Studio at the same time because we, at the time, we had a large client who offered us a very large project that required Trotto Studio. So we literally bought Trotto Studio that day and hired an in-person trainer to teach us how to use it. Mm-hmm. So a few takeaways there. Number one, always make your translation software purchases of any type, make them as a business decision, not an emotional decision. So make the business case.
I think that's a really good idea because I've heard of a lot of people who have said, a handful of people over the years who've told me, I really want to get it because everybody else has it. And then they got it and they spent, you know, whatever it was on it, lots of money. And then they didn't end up using it because their clients didn't really ask for it. And particularly,
right.
People who work a little bit outside the agency group or, you know, who work for direct agencies who aren't familiar with it or whatever. But I've had several people tell me that. And like you're saying, obviously in their case, they didn't come up with a business case first. They just bought it because they felt like they had to and they never ended up using it or learning it. So that was kind of a
right part. Yeah. So make the business case first and think, what do your clients require or what do you feel would be helpful for your own use if your clients don't care or don't know? Lots of my direct clients don't know or care about translation memory software, just the way I don't know or care what software my accountant uses, for example. Right. Then think, what would be helpful to you? And I think the other takeaway from the story I just told is do not plan on learning to use the full-featured market leader translation memory tools in 15 minutes. When I first opened Trotto Studio, I couldn't even figure out where you type the translation. And I might not be the world's most tech-savvy translator, but I'm not a complete, you know, techno-luddite. And I could not even figure out where you put the translation. So I think that you want to think of it more like learning Photoshop or InDesign than like learning some little app that you can learn to use in 15 minutes. And I will say too, I don't use translation memory for everything. I find it's not very helpful when I want to combine or split sentences or where the main emphasis is on the flow of the text. So for example, clients where I translate their blog or I just translated a book translation sample chapter and I did not use translation memory for that. But at the same time, I think it would be crazy to try to translate some documents without a translation memory. I have clients I've been working with for over 10 years on similar types of projects. And so on those types of things, the TM helps a lot. And I think one feature that people don't talk about enough is automated glossaries. So I have some international development clients who have glossaries with literally thousands of terms in them. There's no way you could ever remember them all, no matter how good your memory is. And so the automated glossary feature where your translation memory tool is just going to alert you to the fact that a word that's in the glossary is in the document, you want to make heavy use of that as well. So Eve, did you want to talk to us a little bit about your history with CAT tools?
Yeah, so this shows you how old I am. I started out with version 2 of Trados. So I always like saying that to people. So that's when it was still running on a black screen with green text. And the technology was not that widespread. So in that case, I was a lot younger then, and I was working for an agency, and I was actually, we were trying to get the, we were convinced that that was a good technology to use, or it was a helpful technology for translators. And so we were helping to get that out into the marketplace, but kind of partnering with, which was Trados at the time. For somebody who don't know, it was a separate company. It was different. The SDL bought them. Gee, I don't know. They'll have to tell us 5 or 10 years ago or something. So it used to not be SDL Trados. It was Trados, a separate company out of Germany. And so we were helping to get it out there. So we would discount deals, which you still see sometimes, but it was a little different back then. We'd cut discount deals, and then we would, ask all our translators to get it, and they'd buy it kind of through us, but it was really just a pass through. And so anyway, and because I sold so many of them for them, I don't consider myself a sales lady, but I guess I was there. They gave me a license, a free license. And so that was version 2. And then, and then I didn't use Trados again, really. Studio became Studio Trados. At least in my vocabulary, I'm trying to get out of using that because it's more studio now. But and like in Corinne said, and I think it was 2011 we got.
I think that's right. I was thinking that it was like 7 years ago. So
yeah. I wrote 2014 in my notes, but I'm thinking it was 2011, and we've worked our way up since there. But that was kind of funny, just because there's some different history behind it, different people with different ways that Trados used to work, and then we and kind of skipped all that. There was some painful technological stuff, I don't know, in between there. And Corinne and I were like, yes, we skipped all that with 2000, going straight to 2011. Mm-hmm. And so just in kind of all the permutations and the sale and all that kind of stuff. And then like Corinne said, in the meantime, I also used, I've used WordFast and WordFast Classic and WordFast Pro, and I have a license from MOQ, and I also have a Logiterm license because, I work a lot in the Canadian, translating into English for some Canadian clients who use Logiterm too. So, and then, I lost my train of thought here. Oh, so I wanted to point out too that for about 5 or 10 years, till about 5 or 10 years ago, CAD tools really were not that commonly used by into English translators, which is what Corinne and I are. We translate from French into English, and so we were on the cutting edge. No, I do feel like though when we first jumped on. Well, I mean, I used WordFast too many years before that, but that always kind of gave us an edge at the time. Because at that time, I really feel like a lot of into English translators weren't doing it. And whereas translators who worked from English into other languages, it has been much more of a requirement for many, decades before that. And so I think that there were two reasons for the into English slacking. Was that there wasn't that much supply of it. People that didn't want to do it for whatever reason. And so then people felt like they couldn't, clients felt like they couldn't demand it. Mm-hmm. But then like I said, about 10 years ago, it seemed to me like it reached a critical point where whether there was supply or not, whether the English people into English, working into English, one of the tools or not, agency clients were actually saying, well, you better get it. So for a while, that kind of gave us a leg up on that was kind of an extra selling point. Well, we have Studio. And now, it's still good. But even for me, too, when I'm contracting jobs out for people in English, I think, well, if you don't have it for a particular type of project, like Corinne was saying, you know, then I'll have to go to somebody else because anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's kind of our background with tools on our own. So Corinne, I was thinking, since we're talking about cat tools, I think that'd be helpful for our listeners to talk about what actual cat tools are out there on the market. Do you want to address that for us? And then also, I was also thinking kind of a related question to that. What's your take? And then I can give my take on whether translators need multiple tools. So that question comes up often, especially as people get into the industry or, you know, they're saying, well, I'm getting, you know, kind of bombarded with requests for different tools. Do I have to get them all? So start addressing that for us.
Yep. Okay. So a few things. I think first of all, in the, you know, modern software environment, it's important to distinguish between CAT tools, so computer-aided translation, or TM, translation memory, or sometimes people call them translation environment tools, to distinguish between those and anything to do with machine translation. So there's starting to be sort of more crossover as the market leader TM tools all allow MT plugins. But for anyone who is really starting at ground zero, I mean, I'll give you an example and, you know, embarrass myself here, that the first time I ever used Omega T, like 15 plus years ago, I, you know, put some French text into it and then wondered, like, where's the English? You know, that I lacked an understanding of the difference between TM and MT. So I think it's important to understand that what translation memory is doing is recycling old translations that you or someone else has done. And MT, there is a, you know, an abundance of resources out there on MT, although I am going to touch a little bit on a tool that uses predictive MT.
Well, I think too, just to make the point, sorry, was that it's recycling things that have been done, but it's always human. Even if there's not something, you have the opportunity to put it in. Even if it recycles it, it's a fuzzy match or a match, you are always there to say, oh, I like that. It looks good. Or no, I don't like that. Correct. I found a term from that that I want to use, but that looks, you know, for whatever reason, that's not fitting here. That it's always human interaction, as opposed to just spitting out some machine translation.
Right. So, you know, for anyone who is like, as we said, at real ground zero with this, an example would be if you translated the sentence, the cat is black, and the next sentence was the cat is white, the TM program would alert you that those sentences are only, you know, 25% different. They're a 75% match because the only difference is black and white, and it would alert you to that fact.
And however, though, if for some reason in your language pair, the sentence was actually totally different because of the structure of your language, you could change it, but it's telling you it's probably going to be similar. And so it's just a tool because you don't want to have to necessarily redo that all again. And it's actually helping you because it's causing, implementing consistency that you're able to be consistent.
So we're going to put in the show notes a really good summary that Eve found of the current CAT tools that are out there on a blog called Polylingua. And I think that is a pretty comprehensive list. And then also, I think looking at that list is helpful because let's say you have a client who asks you, do you use MateCat? And you think, what's MateCat? That I think it is good to be familiar with what's out there and so what clients might ask you for. So I think to my eye, the market leader tools are Trotto Studio, which is, you know, far and away the market leader in terms of volume, and then MemoQ and WordFast Pro. So when we talked before about the difference between standalone tools and those that work within another piece of software, WordFast has two flavors, Classic and Pro. And as I mentioned before, Classic works within Microsoft Word and Pro is standalone.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually like a built-in macro that they wrote.
Yeah. So one thing to mention about those three, I would say, as I mentioned, Trotto Studio is by far the market leader in terms of volume. I think MemoQ probably has the best reputation among translators for being translator friendly. And WordFast Pro is, to my knowledge, the only market leader tool that will work natively on a Mac. Mm-hmm. So to touch on that really briefly, because I don't use a Mac, so what I'm about to tell you is entirely hearsay, but rumor has it that I have talked to several translators who attempted to run Trados or MemoQ on a Mac under Parallels. And it was not a great experience. They felt that some of the features never really worked the way they were supposed to. So, for example, one feature in translation memory tools that is tremendously helpful is called the concordance, which means, you know, I could take a French source word in my translation. Let's say I come to the word contrat, and I think, you know, I wonder now, I can't remember the last time I came to the word contrat, I can't remember if I translated it as contract or agreement. So what I do is highlight the word contrat, and in Trados Studio, at least, it's a little pair of binoculars that is the concordance feature icon, and you click it, and it will show you every instance of the word contrat in your open translation memory and show you how you translated it. And one translator I talked to said that when she ran Trados on a Mac under Parallels, the concordance feature never worked. The button was dead. So I think the chance of odd stuff like that happening, and the fact that you then have to separately license Microsoft Office for the Parallels partition on your computer, even if you have a Mac Microsoft Office license, you have to buy a Windows license in order to run it under Parallels with your TM program. I would recommend just buying an inexpensive Windows machine for that purpose. If you look at the list of tools we're going to put up, I think that one thing to think about is the confidentiality of online systems is sort of still up in the air. That you have, I think, some percentage of translators who say, I would never ever upload my client's source documents to any cloud-based system because it would be a violation of the NDA I have with them, non-disclosure agreement. And then you have other translators saying, people do all kinds of confidential things online in the modern world. Like when, if you do online banking, you are basically taking your bank's word for it that they are not going to disclose your confidential information to someone else, and they are going to protect, you know, your account information so that someone doesn't steal the money out of your account.
I wanted to say there's kind of a third thing too that people can, you know, if they disagree, let us know. But I was thinking there's about server, because I do some work on servers for different clients through MemoQ and through Studio. And so to me, that's a little bit even different. It's not necessarily, I mean, I guess it's the cloud, but it depends on how they're configuring it on their end. But it could just be me giving me a direct link to their server. And in that case, it's still protected. It's a little bit different than actual cloud, like we think of out there, you know. It's where they have agreed with their client that we can work on their server. So that's even the third case of that too.
And then I think another sort of flavor of TM tool that you might be interested in looking at is tools that integrate TM and MT. And I think one that is that I have read a bit about is called Lilt, L-I-L-T. And I'll put in the show notes, I actually had a translator write a guest post for my blog about using Lilt. And it was someone who liked it quite a bit. Although, and I thought the interesting thing was this particular translator does not do the type of translation that I would think MT would particularly lend itself to. But I think it depends on your translation personality. So for example, one thing that's different about me and Eve is Eve, and you can correct me if you do this differently, Eve, but I believe that Eve checks the setting in Trados Studio that tells Trados Studio, if you don't find a match in the translation memory, copy the source segment into the target segment box.
Oh, that's because, true. That's correct.
You like having something in the target box. Whereas,
and I do that just to let people know, you know, however their workflow is. I do that because a lot of times there's words that are like a proper name or that kind of thing. I don't want to, I don't want to type them over with making a mistake. Or even if it's a date, even if I change the format, I don't want to actually think, oh, it's the 24th and it's really the 20th. You know, for some reason I have a brain issue, you know, and I do that wrong. So I like to copy it over because some of the stuff, you know, stays the same. So I like to do that.
So I think, you know, for myself, when I have, I don't have an MT plugin in my own translation memory tools, but when I have looked at other translators' computers who have that feature turned on, I don't like it. And that is not, by the way, because I have any sort of moral opposition to MT. Like, I don't think MT is coming to eat all of us anytime soon. I just find the MT style of translation a bit robotic and aggravating, and I would rather not see it.
Yeah, me too, yeah. You know, because I do want to specify the studio. You can do it now in the current version of the studio, but yeah, I have that turned off too because I'm not interested in looking at it.
Right, but if you like, I mean, but I think the point being, the translator who wrote that guest post for my blog just said she found that she worked better when she could take the MT suggestion as a starting point, you know, for her translation. Mm-hmm. So if you like that, maybe look at Lilt.
Oh, and I do want to say about Lilt sorry guys, I'd forgotten about them, but I met them last year at the ATA conference and I was impressed. That's not really my thing, but I did like their presentation and they were very nice.
Yes.
I mean, I got a good feeling from the group anyway. So everybody else, do your own due diligence, but my initial impression of them was favorable.
Yeah, I will say the same thing too, that Lilt has approached me a couple times to review Lilt on my blog, which I didn't really have time to learn to use it myself. So I decided to pay someone else to write a guest post, but I had a very positive impression of them as a company.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think Lilt is worth taking a look at if you are interested in MT. So as far as whether you need more than one tool, I think the first thing to look at is the tool that you do have interoperable with the tool that the client has? So for example, if a client says, this project requires MemoQ, well, maybe it does, you know, or maybe the client wants that because they don't want to deal with interoperability issues, and them being the client, that's their prerogative and is your prerogative to say yes or no to that.
And actually, I have a real life example about that I was recently an editing step in a project that was French into English, a big project, and the client sent me all these files, and then I opened them up and the translations were all there, but all the segments, many, many segments, were marked as had not been translated yet. So every time I touched it, it would stick the source back in there.
Oh no.
And that wasn't my fault in that case, because I know I do that setting normally, because this was a package from a client where a client kind of prepares everything and sends it to you, so they have their own settings that would override my settings. But so that was kind of interesting. And then I said, why is this happening? You know, I said, I'm dealing with it, but it was a little bit stressful because every time I went into edit, it would flick it back into English, into French or
into
whatever.
Into French, right.
Yeah, and then I had to put it back in, you know, then I had to do a control Z to undo it. But like if I'd accidentally missed one or something, anyway, it was kind of stressful. So I asked the client and they said, oh, we didn't realize it was doing that, but we think it may be because the first person in the chain here is using MemoQ for a studio project. So I'm not criticizing MemoQ, but that can happen. But just the idea that there are, even though they're basically, you know, interoperable now, there are little tricky things that happen sometimes, and who knows why, because like you were saying earlier, Corinne, with the Mac thing, I think that sometimes systems are so complex and nobody's system is set up exactly the same, you know, anymore.
Yes.
And so who knows why it did that? And it could easily happen the other way, studio to MemoQ, MemoQ to studio. But right. It can be kind of tricky. So you have to be really careful with that too.
Yeah, so I think, you know, in theory, there are file interchange formats that can work for TM programs. So there's TMX, which is Translation Memory Exchange, or XLIFF, that's XLIFF, which I believe stands for Extensible Localization Interchange File Format. So again, in theory, those are sort of like the RTF of the translation memory world. But you may have clients who just say, you know, to work on this project, you must have WordFast Pro. You know, to work on this project, you know, even I have a mutual client who just, you know, for a number of years tolerated people using different types of CAT tools and finally said, if you want to continue working on this project, everyone must have Trotto Studio.
Yeah.
So I think it's always worth asking, you know, if a client says, you know, requires a certain TM tool, to say to them, you know, would it be possible to run a test? For example, you send me a sample file and I'll translate, you know, one sentence and send it back to you, and we'll make sure that everything can compile correctly, for example. But sometimes clients may just require that you use the tool that they want. And I think, as Eve touched on a little bit before, server-based projects, which are a bit different than cloud-based projects, the client might be able to provide you with a license to work on their server-based project, and you can use their preferred tool and get some experience with it without having to invest in your own license. And for what it's worth, I just got an inquiry from an agency the other day that offered that up front, that they said, you know, we require that you use this specific tool. I actually can't, it's not that I don't want to say what it was, I can't remember. and they said, but if you don't have a license to it, we'll give you a one-time license to our server version and you could use that.
Right. And sometimes for me, even though I do NumMQ, but I just truthfully for anybody who's listening out there who's a client, no. Mm-hmm. That I use Studio more, so I am better at it. And so for me, like I'll do it and I'm fine at it, you know, but I feel a little more like a fish in water when I am able to use Studio because I'm quicker and I know like a lot of advanced features and stuff like that. And I figure out stuff in MemoQ and I can use the basic features fine. Right. But for me, I like to be a little more sophisticated user. And so I'd rather use Studio, but mm-hmm. for certain clients, and I've used, you know, the same long-term project over and over again, it's not a big deal. And I can use either one, but whatever. But I was going to say too, that for Studio, even though I do own my own license, some clients, for whatever reason, they want me to use their server, and so I do. You know, it's that in Studio it works. That is just through. I don't even know if you can. I suppose someone else can answer that. There, maybe you know, Corinne, if you work on a Studio project and you don't have a Studio license, I don't know if they give you one or not, because I already have mine.
Right. I don't know that either. Yeah, that's a good question.
Probably. I don't know. But so, but then in that case, they're controlling it even more, I guess. They have, you know, certain settings that they want or they don't. Or the, and for one client, I know when I do it on the server, their TM is really, really big. And so they want to, I guess, run it from their server. I don't know.
Gotcha. Anyway. So Eve, sort of piggybacking on what you were just talking about now, maybe it would be helpful if you could talk a little bit in the big picture about what CAT tools are and are not useful for, what do you use them for, and what do you feel that they're not very useful for?
So like we have kind of talked around a little bit, for basically they're really useful for things that are really repetitive. And so like Corinne and I have both worked for this one same client where this stuff is, you know, really repetitive from year to year. Actually, it's interesting to look at repetition too, and it, you know, it has different terminology in the different tools. But the repetition can be within a project, within one translation memory, I'm sorry, within one, you know, one file, where you could have like at the beginning of the sentence, you have the cat is at the beginning of the file, you have the cat is black. And then, you know, 10,000 words later, you have the sentence, the cat is black. Not that we'd really have that sentence, but you know. But then also there's other repetitions where, so that's within a file, but then you also have maybe 5 years ago you translated the cat is black. And so the big TM that you have will still pull that up. So I think it's repetitive projects, you know, within the project itself, but also over a long time, over a long time span as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I had in my notes here also smaller texts that are repetitive over time. It's super helpful because you want consistency. It's not, like I said, I never look at it as from like, it's, you know, I look at it as it's a big database where it's pulling stuff that I've done before or someone that's on my trusted team has done before, right, over time. Mm-hmm. So I think, and like you had mentioned, Corinne, even if the text is not repetitive on a phrase or segment scale, because if it's not a segment scale, like when we're talking about getting, you know, matches or fuzzy message means it's a partial match, it's less than 100%, but it's still going to be matching in some fashion. So those are usually done on what's called a segment scale. So normally a segment is a sentence,
right?
Or like at a line break or something like that. Like if there's no period at the end of it, but the line breaks, then it's going to break it there. Obviously, it's not going to be a word because that'd be ridiculous. That'd be substituting word for word. But sometimes you could do it if it makes sense for your project. I've never done this, but I can imagine that there's some project where this would make sense. You could make a segment a paragraph, for example, if there's some type of content that you work with. And so. So sometimes, though, text is more repetitive on a word basis, like a special terminology. And so one thing that's really great, too, is that, you know, it's not on the segment scale, but it's on a smaller scale. You can easily search TM tools like MemoQ or Studio for terminology, and you can use terminology databases that help enforce the right terminology.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so I like that. I really like that aspect about that, too. And so... So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So I do have the impression, because of working with other people over the years, and because, as I've mentioned to the listeners before, I do a significant amount of subcontracting, I just have this impression, at least with Studio, and someone else will have to give us a scoop on MOQ, that people don't necessarily seem to use the terminology capabilities to their fullest. Because traditionally, I think that, sorry, Studio, but that people felt like multi-term was very difficult to use. And I felt like that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like it was built a long time ago on other, I don't even know, Paul Filkin or someone can give us the scoop behind that, but a little bit different technology and it was hard to use. But I think in the last like 5 years, it's really gotten fairly easy to use. And especially old timers, though, are still afraid of, oh no, it's really hard. So I don't want to use multi-term. Multi-term is the terminology tool that goes with Studio. And so they're really into Excel spreadsheets. And so I've been doing my own part to encourage people, don't use Excel spreadsheets anymore, you know, because what that does is it kind of separates you. It makes it so that you're using this third-party application and you're having to manually look up terms all the time.
Right.
But I think that the CAD tools are really wonderful if you use whatever terminology management exists in the particular CAT tool that you've chosen, because what it should do is, as you're typing along or you're working along, it's prompting you with the right terminology, as opposed to, oh, maybe this is terminology I should look up. Let me go over to Excel, manually search for it, and then come back. You know, so, but really, because the tool, at least with Stratos, was so difficult to use originally, that I think there's still residual fear of using that, and that people aren't benefiting from this more automated process or whatever. So, and I won't get into this, but as we all know, there's like really cool tools that if you have a bunch of glossaries in Excel, you could easily convert them like super easy. And that was something too that when Corinne mentioned years ago when we took a class from a Studio expert, and she talked to us at the time, not anymore, but at the time, about how to convert Excel glossaries into multi-term. It was this horrible like 15-step process that was very technical. And now it's not like that. It's literally like a 5-second process.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a little wizard that you drag your Excel glossary on top of it. And the first time I used it, it worked so fast that I thought it hadn't done anything.
Yeah, I know. That's like, where'd it go?
It was literally probably 3 seconds that it took to convert my, you know, the client's Excel glossary into multi-term format that I could use with Studio.
Yeah. Well, so going back, so I think that one is if you actually do have any terminology, because even if you have a short terminology list, but it pops up a lot in the translation you're doing, I think CAT tools are really great for that. I think they're really great, like we talked about, for repetitions. And I also think that sometimes, like you said, sometimes I don't use them for creative text either, but sometimes I do if it's a longer text. Like I just did a novel and two. And so then that more, it was creative and the segments were a little bit bigger, but the reason I used it was because the novel was long. I mean, at least for, I don't know if it was long as a novel, but for me to translate, it was 100,000 words. And so I didn't necessarily remember at the end of the novel what I'd said at the beginning of the novel for the certain, you know, they were talking about a place or whatever, just certain types of things, basically the terminology. What did I say, you know? And so I wanted to be able to not have to search through, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of words in Word format trying to figure out how I translated this thing.
Right.
So in that particular case, I did do the original thing in Studio, and then I did a whole other pass, which I often do with creative stuff that I do in Studio. Then I'll do a whole nother pass, a separate pass, just in Word, you know,
in
revising
Word,
freely, right. Freely revising and not sticking to it. But I consider the first part a little bit more kind of that first draft, and you have to be able to be consistent and be a little more, you know, kind of technical in a way. And then the second pass, I get more creative or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, so that's why, those are some of the things that come to my mind. And the other thing is that besides kind of the glossary piece and the, you know, obviously getting repetitions piece, is that you can also do a nice QA process in the tools themselves. And there may be other tools that we'll talk about in a little bit, but there may be other tools to do QA process. But a lot of the TM tools themselves have a good QA process that at least will get you started on the QA portion before you move on to another, and you know, some other outside QA enforcers. Mm-hmm. So Corinne, did you want to talk to us a bit about the QA process the CAT tools can help us with? So I do recall Yost, is that she's saying over the years, if people know, what's the name of his his
the translator's right? toolbox.
Yeah, the translator's toolbox. So he's, you know, very well known for being a tech expert in the translation space. And I remember him saying over the years that people are often looking for QA procedures to use on cat tool processed files or third-party apps for QA, but they often seem to overlook or ignore the QA features that are built into those applications right. already. So right. Corinne, why don't you talk to us about a little bit about that?
Yeah. So whatever translation memory tool you own now or you are thinking of buying, I think the first step is really learn the QA features that exist in that tool before you go looking at third-party plugins. So sometimes you may have to use a third-party plugin. For example, I know I don't use these because I work mostly with direct clients, but I do know translators who work primarily with agencies who are required to use tools like Crossbench or XBench. We'll put it in the show notes. It's the letter X and then the word bench. That are sort of ramped up QA tools and can be very customized. So we'll put some Crossbench links in the show notes. But I think nearly any translation memory tool should be able to do spell check, punctuation check, check numbers. So it'll look for inconsistencies in numbers between the target and the source. It should be able to convert things like dates and numbers from between country formats. So for example, if you translate, like even I do, between French and English or various European languages and English, it should automatically be able to do the decimal point versus comma reversal. It should be able to check if the target sentence is the same as the source. So sometimes that might be right. You know, sometimes it's just the name of a business or something like that, and you want the target to be the same as the source, but sometimes that's because you forgot to translate it. Mm-hmm. And some tools also allow terminology blacklisting. So for example, when I gave my, you know, contrat example, let's say I'm translating something in French and in that particular document, the client has said, when you come to the word contrat, always translate it as agreement, never as contract. So some tools will allow you to blacklist the word contract so that it will not let you use that word in the translation. It will also, your tool should also be able to look for inconsistent translation of the same word or phrase. So to be able to tell you, you know, this phrase came up 16 times in your document and 14 times you translated it this way and 2 times you translated it this way. Do you want to change them to be all the same?
I hate it when that happens.
I know.
But at least they told me. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. P.S. That's annoying. But
yeah.
And then there are going to be various settings that you can customize. So I wanted to just put in a little plug here for, actually, this does not have to do with TM or even with translation, but my very favorite QA tool is a piece of software called PerfectIt. So Eve and I both use this tool because we have a client that requires it, but I have gotten to really, really love it. So it is a piece of external editing software that works within, it's a Microsoft Word add-on. And I believe I paid about $100 for the license for it. And it does sort of all of those things that I just described, but even more full featured. So for example, it will tell you, you know, in this bulleted list, you ended 7 of the bulleted list entries with a semicolon and 3 with a period, you know,
what I want to say about that. And for this particular client is mm-hmm. really, I feel smart. and then I used to check for all those things manually, but it's right. really tedious. And I mean, I'm happy to do it. I love that client, but I mean, it's, you know, and it's more error prone because you're doing it all manually. Like yeah. I'd have all these checklists and I'm like, check for this. And then like Corinne is saying, you know, about 90% of those things that I've been doing, the Perfectit does it already. So woohoo.
Right. Yeah. Or for example, if you have a word that has more than one acceptable spelling in English. So for example, Microsoft Word, you can spell the word gray, G-R-A-Y or G-R-E-Y, and it will not flag either one as misspelled, but it looks terrible if you have a document with the word gray spelled, you know, in 2 different ways at random. So a tool like Perfectit basically does all of those consistency checks, but in an even more full-featured way.
And I want to say, point out, just because if someone hasn't used it yet, they might not realize that when you actually tell it to make the change, it's really easy. Like,
yes.
It identifies for all of them for you, and you either say, okay, do it like all the ones that were the 14 ones, or do it like the ones that were two, you know, the two of them that were different, or whichever, and it just does it for you, and then you see it.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. So it's not like, then you have to go in and manually change them all.
No.
It's
no more complicated to use than the Microsoft Word spell checker.
Yeah.
If you can use the Microsoft Word spelling and grammar checker, which hopefully you can, Perfectit is not any more complicated than that.
And so. I do have a question. Do you know, Corinne, if that is just in English or is that in other languages too? I can't recall.
Ooh, that's a good question. Does Perfectit exist in other languages? I don't know. Let's research that.
I'm going to look it up. Go ahead.
Okay. So moving on from QA, Eve, let's talk a little bit about automation. So when we talk about the translation and editing process, it seems that over time, as CAT tools have gotten more full-featured, that automation within them has improved a lot as well. So did you want to give us some thoughts on that, Eve?
Yes, I do. But before we do that, I want to say I just was Googling as we were talking, and I did find something just kind of, people have to check it on their own, really, but it says, we don't support Perfectit in other languages. This is from their site. However, some of Perfectit's tests work in other languages, and we have users, especially professional translators, using Perfectit with French, Spanish, German, and Dutch. So maybe with the Latin languages, you know, the Western European, that can, because it's just recognizing patterns, maybe. I don't know. So that's from their website.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. So yeah, talking about automation. So there kind of, we talked about some of them already, but there's so many ways that CAT tools help now by automating repetitive tasks rather than just the actual, you know, you translated this before in addition to that. And I consider myself an advanced studio user, but I still feel like there's so much to learn on that. And there's so much to unpack in these tools that even those of us who've used them for a long time are still discovering new tricks. And related to that, on a little offside note, is that we have had a users group for users of CAT tools to share our knowledge at a peer level, so peer-to-peer information sharing for our local translators group here in Colorado, and that actually yours truly, me, organized. but I just want to talk about that to our listeners, because you may want to think about organizing something like that in your own area. So in our group, we had beginners to people who've been using the tools for a long time, and everyone in our group was able to share information, and everybody learned something new, even the people who've been using the tool a long time. Mm-hmm. So we want to use each other as resources in addition to all the information that's online, like the videos and training or paid training or custom training or whatever. So, you know, they do have a lot of things that we don't even know about, you know, in these tools. They're so complex and so have so many different things we can do. So so back to automation. Yeah, some of the automation tools I like are, I think Corinne mentioned predictive typing. And so that helps a lot when there are repetitive terms or short phrases rather than entire segments. And so rather than retyping a term, for example, that literally shows up 100 times in a text, predictive text can prompt you so that you can just press, when it shows up, then you can just press enter and avoid typing the text. So for example, I don't know, I might be typing the phrase communication strategies, mm-hmm. and it doesn't sound that long, but if you really literally, if you have to type that 100 times and it's, you know, 20 characters long, it's very tedious and you can end up making errors in it. So then, you know, Studio or another translation memory tool will prompt me, oh, COMM, you know, and it basically says, do you want to type communication strategies? Mm-hmm. And so then I press enter, and I know actually that each time I do that, then that it's typed correctly too, and I'm not putting typos in that when I'm typing it over and over and over. So Corinne, you kind of mentioned how there's automated ways to convert number formats. The only thing about that I'd say is to be careful when the source document has mixed formats.
Yes.
So I know sometimes we get stuff where it's supposed to be in the French format, but then they try to be helpful and they put it in the English format too.
Right.
And so because there's both formats, then it kind of confuses the tool. But in general, you know, it's helpful to do that. Also, there's, for example, in Studio, and I don't know what it's called in MemoQ, but I'm sure it exists. There's auto suggest and auto text. So that's the same type of thing where it just kind of prompts you with this type, different types of predictive text and helps things go much more smoothly. And so my favorite tool, Corinne already mentioned, it's not necessarily automation, but it's really what I think is one of the more important things in a CAT tool, which is the concordance. So it shows you, like Corinne said, how a certain term has already been translated in the past by you, you know, at this particular translation session, or what already exists in the translation memory. So even if you don't get any exact or fuzzy match on a certain segment or a certain word, or even if that word doesn't show up in your terminology database, if it exists in the translation memory, if you've already translated it or it's been translated, then it will pop up and you can see examples. So I like this feature too, because it also gives us great insight into the data that's at our fingertips when we have this huge database of what we've already translated or what our trusted colleagues have already translated. Mm-hmm. And so then, as we talked about before, you know, relating this back to, for us anyway, human translation, you know, it's still allowing us to make the final decision of how to craft this sentence, but it's giving us all this information, you know, easily at our fingertips. So I think these are just some examples of how CAT tools help us. There's a lot of wonderful, like I mentioned, information and instructional videos, knowledge bases, help groups on Facebook or otherwise, you know, for information on little tricks and tips that these tools, what they can do for us. So, Corinne, one thing that happens a lot, I think, with the translation tools is because the developers are continually developing, which is good because we want them to be adding new features for us. But then it can often seem like, wow, we've invested a lot of money in this. And then, you know, now they say there's new stuff. You know, how often should I buy new translation tools? Because we're kind of, you know, that happens often. Once you've bought it, too, you're going to be always getting the information about getting updates. So right. What are some suggestions that you have for when people might want to consider buying a new version of their current favorite tool or tools?
Yeah, so I will say that personally, I pretty much do every upgrade. I would, at the very least, not get more than, I think once you get two versions behind, that's probably too many. There's going to be too much new stuff to learn, or you're not going to be compatible anymore mm-hmm. with
I agree with that.
In the tool. So I think the best place in my experience to buy either the software itself or your upgrades, because the upgrade cost is significant. Mm-hmm. I think most of the market leader tools are going to probably run you, you know, $750 to $1,000 on the list price. And so the upgrades are a few hundred dollars, you know, the upgrades
right,
are
they're not $50.
$25, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think the best time is when you go to a conference or some other event where significant discounts are offered. And sometimes, I think we've talked about before in a technology episode, I had a computer completely die on me about a year ago, just went, you know, blue screen of death while I was typing away, and it was, you know, a goner. So when you get a new computer, I think that could be a good time to do an upgrade as well. But one thing Eve mentioned when we were talking about this episode that I agree with is I would not go out and necessarily get every upgrade like the day it's released. I think that you want to, especially if it's a significant upgrade, maybe wait and see what other people think about it before you, and wait for the software maker to do some bug fixes and things like that before you buy it. So as an example, I haven't bought Trotto Studio 2019 yet, but I think I probably will buy it at the ATA conference in October.
That's my take on it too, yeah.
Because that's where the best price usually is. So I don't know, what do you think about upgrades, Eve?
Yeah, I think basically what you said. And I also think that waiting for bug fixes is important because, you know, because these applications are very helpful, but they're also very complex. Like right. I just had a big thing the other day where I couldn't get it to work, blah, blah, blah. We've all had that happen. You know, yeah. You don't need to hear the story, but that it's very stressful. And so that, you know, if we're purposely, you know, or we're trying to get the new version and then there's bugs in it. And then we're trying to get this, you know, thing off on a tight deadline. It's very, very stressful. So I feel like for myself, I think like, like, as long as it's working fine and there's nothing weird about it, I'm happy to have them do the first bug fix before I get it.
Right. Well, so. And another point, you know, that I just thought of while you were talking, Eve, you know, this may go without saying, but I think it bears repeating, never, ever, ever do an upgrade or even install a new service pack in the middle of a big project.
Oh, yes.
You know, don't ask how I learned that.
Yes, exactly. Well, because then this latest one I had, it was even funny. I had this problem without even doing that. It kept saying, oh, do you want to install the new one, this new one? I'm like, nope, not right now. Mm-hmm. And then for one, because it takes a while, you know, and I didn't have 45 minutes to give it for the process. But that also, I thought, well, I don't, what if I do that? And there's some weird thing, like I said, because maybe on your machine it'd be fine, but on mine, because I use Windows 365 or whatever, you know, Microsoft Office 365, it would be different or something like that. So I think so too. Don't ever do it until you're done with the project. It's put to bed and you have time to focus on it.
Right. So when you have, you know, when we always talk about, you know, what do you do when you have a slow period? Enjoy it and, you know, catch up on things that you've been meaning to catch up on, that upgrading your TM tool is a great project for that kind of time. And I think, you know, I'll say just, you know, as a sort of summary, overall, I really like Trotto Studio, but it also has a well-deserved reputation for inscrutable error messages. So one that I get with some frequency is object not set to an instance of an object.
Oh, we all get that, I think.
and I think that is one of those things that, you know, that you look at it and go, what does that even mean?
And at 11:30, the night before it's due, it's not very fun.
You will be crying. Yes, exactly. You will be
crying. So that's exactly like you said, for sure, Corinne, you know, not doing something in the middle of a project where it's, I don't know. Yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, overall, I feel very happy with Trotto Studio, but I do think its reputation for throwing sort of odd, inscrutable error messages is, you know, it is a well-earned reputation. And so sometimes that's going to happen due to no fault of your own, but you at least don't want to provoke that by doing something like upgrading in the middle of a huge project.
And so truthfully, probably for any of the catch-alls, you want to get used to and good at searching out, you know, searching the web and finding out when people have had similar problems. Because this happened to me last week, and I was like really upset.
Yes.
And I thought, well, you know, in a day, this will seem like, you know, in the past, but
no,
at the time it was stressful because I was trying to meet a deadline. So it all worked out, but you know, just like you said, actually in that case, it wouldn't even start. So,
Okay. So this topic was Eve's idea. I think it was a fun episode, and we like talking about ways to increase your efficiency. And I think for translators, using cat tools in a smart way is for sure one way to do that. So Eve, did you have any wrap up thoughts for us?
No, thanks everybody for listening. And we look forward to your feedback and your different tips and tricks and just different, your thoughts on cat tools in general.
Great. So thanks everyone for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this discussion. And if you have any comments or questions or ideas for episode topics, you can email us at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on this episode on our website, speakingoftranslation.com, or subscribe to us or review us in Apple Podcasts. And I'm also excited to report that we are now on Stitcher.
Yay!
So I'm having some challenges getting our artwork on Stitcher, but all of
the content. Don't blame us.
Right. All of the content is there. And we got a couple of requests from listeners who use Stitcher as their main podcast app. So thanks to them for nudging us.
Thank you, Corinne, for being my tech guru for that.
Yeah, to do that. So we are certainly in Apple Podcasts and we are now on Stitcher as well.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you again in a future episode.